Extra Points is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it and must be 21 years or older.
Welcome, Extra Points listeners, and congratulations on making it through yet another week. Good news, the weekend awaits with its enchanting promises of endless sports and free time that ends up with you screaming silently at some jerk in the Costco parking lot instead. Or maybe I'm just projecting. Either way, we know how hard you work, and while we hope listening to all our shows makes that time go a little faster, we don't want that to feel like work in and of itself. So we've had our producers pick out their favorite bits and put them together in a half-hour supercut for you to sample. I know, I can't believe we have producers either. If you like something, check out the full episode the next week wherever you get your podcasts. In the meantime, thanks for supporting the network. And let me just say from the bottom of my heart as the co-founder that I sincerely hope your favorite team still loses to mine. Enjoy the shows.
We have to start off this best of with the biggest news in sports right now involving Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter. Did his interpreter just steal money from Ohtani, or was it a cover up for Ohtani betting on sports? We discussed this on Minus Three.
Well, let's get spaghetti. Getty's bad goat, so we can talk about the big story.
Okay. By the way, quick aside before we get into the Ohtani stuff, seeing Yamamoto get rocked last night and being like pulled early was so good for the Yamamoto signing with the Dodgers is what's kind of making me hate Ohtani and the organization more. But anyway, so the story is coming out now that his interpreter, a man named Ipe Mizuhara, a longtime interpreter for Shohei Ohtani, was hired by the Dodgers, was now saying that he's committed like theft and he stole $4.5 million from Shohei. But the timeline of events, and I believe former pitcher Dallas Braden put out a timeline of what actually happened, that Ohtani's rep goes on ESPN and says that he transferred $4.5 million to the bookmaker on behalf of his friend, the interpreter, because he felt bad that he had gambling debts. So he paid them off and he like swore he'll never do it again. Then a spokesperson for Ohtani came out and said that that Ipe was lying after they just gave a large statement to ESPN. And then now the lawyers are claiming that it was massive theft and Ohtani had zero knowledge of the gambling debts whatsoever. But if you read the ESPN article, Ohtani's name was on these betting.
He's the one who made the transfer, right? Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Because the bookie wanted to promote his business by saying that Ohtani was betting on it. Also, the interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, lived in the United States for over 25 years. So he's seen America legalized gambling and now has seen it like what it is now, where you could bet through your phone and stuff. So how, like, I don't know why he thinks putting $1 million on credit through a bookie is the same thing as DraftKings, which they kind of allude to also in this ESPN article. And, the reason, and coming back to Hench brought up before, why it bothers Yankees fans or Red Sox fans or other big market teams that haven't done this sort of contract, maneuvering that the Dodgers did. They deferred all his money down the road because if he was suspended by the MLB, they don't pay you. So that's why it was pushed, they kicked it down there. And you could say this is conspiratorial. And I know in society today, we want to.
Thought I was just about to ask you. There's no evidence. You're just speculating that they deferred his money because they were aware of this.
I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked if that was the case. I mean, if they do their due diligence as an organization and they're investigating and they see that he has these, it's not like these betting slips were brand new. This has been going on for a bit of time and they knew that something could arise. The way to not have the black mark on baseball and have Ohtani not get paid is we're going to kick your contract down there when you're retired and you can get paid after you're done. And that's like, they could avoid a nasty situation, which I think they're in now. And I hate to be conspiratorial, but we're not that dumb as human beings to think like, oh yeah, this is all completely on his interpreter who the Dodgers hired and nothing to do with Ohtani and
it's just money.
So I wish the worst.
He's just good guy in it for his pal.
we We got to get into the interpreter game, man. I didn't know they give you a $4.5 million line of credit. What do you
pretty good
as an interpreter? That's pretty nuts. And it's also, there's something ironic about a guy whose entire life is hearing somebody say something and then parroting it precisely in a different language. And so they said, okay, here's the story you're going to tell. You're going to go tell this story. And he's like, I did it. Like, why are you still, I told the story you told me to tell and you're still throwing me under the bus. Like, obviously this is not a story that can stand up to any scrutiny. You know, a guy that makes, I don't know, $150,000 a year can't be betting $4.5 million. That's not how the world
works. By the way, 9:40 a.m. Pacific Coast time here on Thursday. Latest is Major League Baseball, no investigation. This is all Jake.
I mean, I don't, you know, what do you do when you're in bed with, you know, it's like, yes, everyone should gamble. That's Major League Baseball's position. Gambling is great. I mean, obviously we talked a lot about it with the Calvin Ridley thing, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like, oh, you know, you can't gamble even if you're betting on your team. Or like, it's so this might be the case where pro sports teams just go, look, obviously everybody gambles. If you throw a game or we have reason to believe, you know, you bet against your team and, you know, walked in the winning run, obviously you'll be banned. But this idea that you can't bet on other sports or can't, you know, should always be able to bet on your team to win. You know, my point is like every player should be obligated to bet on their team to win.
Same thing as with the big steroid scandal hit Major League Baseball. These guys are cheating to win. Like, what about the guys who ain't doing it? Ain't you committed to winning, friend? You know, ain't you all in? I agree with this. The issue that people will point to, like when Pete Rose was betting on the Reds, was, yeah, but then that creates or that informs bullpen decisions and otherwise in game if he's gone heavy on the red legs in a given game and he might forego tomorrow's game in favor of trying to win this game. I don't know. That feels gambling misdemeanor to me in the grand scheme. Well, also betting against your team is another thing. And I do think here's the evidence. And against Ohtani that kind of makes you think like maybe Ohtani was betting on the Angels is that he lost millions of dollars.
Well, to clarify that,
if you're only bet on your team, if you're on a good team, Ohtani, that's the trick, man. Yeah.
Per what his interpreter said, which, by the way, makes between $300,000 and $500,000 annually. So a little bit more than we were talking about.
But God, I got to get on my Duolingo.
Exactly. But he did say that he never bet on baseball, and MLB players and employees are actually allowed to bet on other sports, not the MLB, obviously, but they just cannot do it with the illegal bookmakers or offshore websites. So that's kind of where the illegality stuff comes in. It's not because he was doing a Pete Rose and betting on his own team. It was because,
oh, I know.
He was betting on soccer, NBA, NFL, college football. And honestly, this just goes back to what Chris Carter told NFL rookies, just find a fall guy. And this is clearly a fall guy.
I mean, it's in the most ham-handed way possible. And I get it that now it is, or there was no betting on baseball and certainly not on the Halos.
Why does he just,
but I mean, like it keeps getting closer and closer to that with each updated story. We're getting closer to what feels like something closer to the truth. Right.
But why doesn't he just say, I love gambling and then do a ad? I don't that's where we're at. Like what, you know, hey, the most recognizable athlete on the planet loves to gamble. You should too.
Zion Williamson's in shape and the Pelicans are good. Martin Weiss and Mark Gunnels on Lemon Pepper Parlay discuss if the Pelicans can actually make some noise in the Western Conference come playoff time.
Zion Williamson lost 25 pounds?
I was going to send that to you. I meant to text that to you because I wanted to see your reaction, but I was like, I'm going to save it for the show because you always, you know, used to say some bad, mean things to him. So I didn't respond to this. We know we text back and forth behind the scenes. He's going to text me the player introductions for the Pelicans games. And he's like, oh, Brandon Ingram has more clout than Zion.
I'm just saying, it's interesting to me that the number one overall pick is also the first person announced. And also Herb Jones got the most love. But when I was going to check up and see if this was an actual act in the 90s or if I couldn't remember. But shout out to the return of Fatboy Slim. There were a music art. There's a DJ, English musician named Norman Quentin Cook, also known as power forward for the New Orleans Pelicans, Zion Williamson. Shout out to him. Fat boy is slimming down.
This is what you wanted. I think Zion probably watches this podcast and listens to it because you've been bullying him for years now. And you know what? He's finally like, you know what, Martin Wise, there you go. I lost 25 pounds and he's been relatively healthy this year. He's only missed a handful of games. So
I think probably what maybe helped was losing 25 pounds. Maybe it was a good idea to stop going to McDonald's after practice and getting every snack from 7-Eleven on the way home. Like, I mean, maybe that probably helped. You know, maybe we should stop door dashing fried catfish po' boys, Zion. And it seems as if it's working out well. New Orleans Pelicans are secretly the hottest team in the Western Conference.
To his defense, though, Martin, if you lived in New Orleans, that was like the worst place for him to go food-wise. Like, come on. Let's be real. Like, you know, the food down there is amazing.
See, that's absolutely right. I did live in New Orleans, but you know what? I didn't get paid millions of dollars to be a professional athlete in New Orleans. And if you can eat that whenever you want to. That's the whole point. Where's your discipline? Where's your dedication? Where's all of it? And it seems as if from all the reports that after he got completely embarrassed in the in-season, in the play-in tournament, all of a sudden, I had it right the first time. From all reports, it seems that after he got embarrassed in the play-in tournament in the championship game, he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to take this basketball thing seriously. And sure enough, now finally, just what, 4 years into his career, we're finally in a place where he's taking his body in a serious manner.
Hey, better late than never. And not only did he get embarrassed in that, we know about the offseason that he had. We don't got to get into that, but if you know, you know.
I saw a picture of him with somebody else who he could. If that wasn't Mariah Mills, you couldn't have told me she didn't go to the same surgeon.
So you're saying Zion has a type?
Yeah, BBL. That's the type. I'm surprised he didn't get one himself. Oh, no. Maybe that's what he did. Maybe that's what he did. Because remember when Mariah was tweeting and she was telling him how she would tell him not to eat the honey buns or whatever he was eating and all this? Maybe the new one took him to her doctor. So that way, but they just did the reverse, right? You know what I'm saying? He's like, yo, take it out of my gut and put it in her butt.
Don't do Zion like that, man. He put in the work. Like you mentioned, they're quietly the hottest team in the West right now. I'm glad we're having this segment right now so you can acknowledge some good things about Zion. Because normally on this show, you're the one that's always ripping them. So I'm glad that you saw that report and we can acknowledge that. And I'm looking forward to seeing them in the playoffs.
Not only seeing the report, but I'm seeing the results on the court. He's
he looks spry again.
He looks, I'm not going so far to say he looks dukish, but I don't know if we'll ever get that level of athleticism, but the idea that Zion caught the ball, like what, other 3-point line and then scored with less than 4 seconds. Like that's something that he would not have been able to do a year ago, 2 years ago, 2020. He would have either blown a tire trying to go too fast because he's not equipped to go that speed, or he just wouldn't have got it off.
Yeah. And if you look at his last 4 games, this is maybe his arguably his best 4-game stretch of his career. I mean, he's averaging about 30 points a game, and he's shooting about 70%. I mean, he's playing very efficient basketball as of late, and he's crashing the boards, too. He's averaging 8 rebounds in this month alone.
Thank you. Finally. It's about time that Zion, you know, power forward, who's quite wide, should be able to box everybody out, is finally getting rebounds. And the good thing about it is when he does get a rebound, he's able to get the rebound and then and start the break immediately because it just takes the Pelicans to a new level. But what impressed me the most out of it, honestly, and this was like the thing that I was like, all right, Martin, your eyes aren't lying to you, is when they played the Clippers and he came out and he was like, no, I'm guarding Kawhi. So wait a minute, dude. Like, hold on. You sure you don't want to guard Terrence Mann over there? Leave Kawhi to Herb or Trey Murphy or something like that. He's like, no. I'll do it. I'll got it. And if he is at least willing and desiring to take that type of matchup, it shows me if he can do it consistently, that he is starting to turn a corner into taking this that much more seriously.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And the overall theme of this segment, you know, him losing that 25 pounds, being more agile, not only for offensively, but defensively, you know, moving your feet side to side, you know, guarding other wings. You know, now you're not restricted just to be in the post. You can get out there in a perimeter as well. You know, teams can't just hunt you on the switch. And if they do, you feel comfortable with Zion being able to at least make things difficult for guards when they do try to hunt him on a switch. So I think this is really good for this team, man. We talked about them last week a little bit. They're kind of the forgotten team in the West. When you talk about the hierarchy, you know, you talk about obviously the main four teams at the top. And then the Pelicans get lost in that shuffle. Like, you even hear more about obviously the Lakers and the Mavs and, you know, the Suns than the Pelicans. They kind of are that team that's just there and nobody's even looking at right now. And they won, I think, 7 of their last 8 games.
Well, they're 7-3 in their last 10 on a 2-game winning streak right now. And, of course, the one game that they lost is the game I bet on them. But I will say this. They're going to win a first-round playoff series.
Let's take a quick break here.
You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager. Returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You should always let your kids stay up late to watch March Madness, unless it's UVA putting up an abysmal offensive performance. Listen to Toby Mergler and Dave Damashek talk about watching March Madness as a kid on Trendy.
I've heard you tell the story before about Mo Damashek being a hero, old Mo, and coming in and grabbing you and letting you go and watch NCAA tournament basketball game and taking you out of school. Do I have that right?
You do have it right, you know, and I always hail good parents and, you know, how we measure good parenting, you know, raising responsible, contributing members of society. Okay, fine, whatever. Here's what I'm talking about. My mother came and boosted me from school. I wish I could remember what grade I was in, but I do remember that the Pitt Panthers had made the tournament and were in a showdown against Louisiana Tech led by the mailman, Karl Malone, little known but rising star, a myth down in those parts of basketball America. They won the game, but Dave Damashek also won the day because his mother boosted him from school and let him watch the tournament instead of listening to the man's nonsense.
So I brought that up not just because I love the story and I love Mo and want her legend to continue to grow, but I had the exact reverse experience last night, Dave, and I am equally proud. My sixth grader, I said to her, hey, it's a special occasion. UVA's in the tournament. You can stay up late and watch this. And with 4 minutes left in the first half, after I told her this again, she goes, no, I'm good, and put herself to bed rather than continuing to watch UVA. She chose in sixth grade, rather than staying up as a special treat, the eternal darkness of sleep, of being alone in her room by herself, rather than continuing to watch this nonsense.
And you're, you know, off the hook, Lenardi. You don't have to try and justify anything. It's been laid bare. Tom Izzo's critiquing the tournament today. Jay Billis says it got all wrong. It was all wrong. Stephen A. Smith is calling for Tony Bennett to resign. I think that your daughter rises above all of that. This is one would-be basketball fan looking at the tournament and saying, no, thanks. I don't care for it. I hope you're listening, CBS. I hope you're listening, NCAA. Your tournament's going down.
A tradition unlike any other, and to keep with tradition, Jon Rahm unveiled his Masters dinner menu after he won the tournament last year. So, of course, Dave Damashek and Sarah Tiana on Extra Points have to give out what their dinner menu would look like.
Jon Rahm is, you know, the Masters is coming up in a couple of weeks here. As soon as the tournament ends, you will be watching as you look at collegiate basketball players toil. You'll see a lot of commercials with Jim Nance and otherwise. I don't like the commercials, by the way, for the Masters. I don't like the tenor. I don't like that song. I know some people respond to it. It doesn't do anything for me. It's a little too close to like a religious experience, the way they portray
it. And they used to play the Ray Charles Georgia song.
That's pretty good. That's yeah. Better. Yeah, but Jon Rahm has announced his, you know, as they do, Fuzzy Zeller made famous that the champion or made infamous that when you win, you get to choose the menu for the big feast. Eddie Spaghetti, do you happen to have that menu? Let's take a quick review of it.
I do have the menu. So his starters or appetizers are an acorn-fed Iberian ham cured pork loin. He has a cheese with a black truffle topping, a spicy Basque chorizo with potato. He has Mama Rahm's classic lentil stew, a Spanish omelet, onions and confit potatoes, and a creamy chicken fritters confit potatoes. So that's all of his like tapas intro to the first course. And the first course is a Basque crab salad with a potato. And then we get to your main course and you have a choice of either the Basque ribeye with lettuce and peppers or I have no idea what this is, a turbot Navarra white asparagus. I'm assuming it's some sort of vegan dish for those who don't partake in meat. And then the dessert is a puff pastry cake with custard and chantilly cream. And I believe also he created this menu with very famous chef Jose Andre.
One of the great human beings doing great things for our society when we need it the most. But I don't know if Rahm is making a contribution. It sounds like a pretty good menu. By the way, Jon Rahm looks freakishly like the guy, the milk guy in the first scene of Inglourious Basterds. who, you know, his family gets shot because he's hiding he has the people hiding under his floor. Perrier La Petite is his name, one of the great names for a character, but that's exactly who John Rahm looks like. Sarah Tiana, what would you serve if you won the Masters? When you win the Masters, what will you serve?
Yes, when I'm allowed to play the Masters as a woman. Let's see.
And win it.
Yeah. Well, turbot, first of all, is a fish. I just looked it up. Hmm. I'm like, that's a great name. I would like to. I can't wait for people in Silver Lake to name their kids turbot. What? No paella from the Spaniard? It feels like...
disappointing.
Yeah. Or mussels or like, you know, whatever. Whatever the Spaniards... eat. What would I serve? I mean, I would serve chicken and dumplings and biscuits and gravy.
So you would show the master Sarah Tiana's idea of classy food.
I would just serve the pimento cheese sandwiches that are $1. You're like, you guys have to eat like the people. I mean, I make a really good meatball, so I would probably make
that would be classy. If the guy went into the kitchen and made it up for his pals, you know, like, hey, you know what, Tiger? No. I made this myself. That would be a nice touch from you.
What about you? What would you do?
Cold cuts, just like a big.
No bread, just cold cut.
No. My mother didn't raise an animal. I'd have some loaves of bread at the end of it for you. Just go ahead, put your sandwich together. Got some bags of chips for you. Do something like that. Let's all watch the tournament together and get drunk, you know?
Tuna melt would be high on my list. Big tuna melt girl over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think...
eat at my dinner, it sounds like.
I think... No. I love Southern... I love the Southern feast when somebody cooks something like that up. What would I want to serve to the Masters, though? Like, it feels like you have to make some statement, right? It can't just be your favorite food. That's too easy. You got to, like you say, you got to represent something.
I would probably do barbecue ribs. You know what I mean? Like, I would probably do, like, just the kind of stuff that I grew up eating. Like, my mom's Italian, but we grew up in Georgia, so...
If I did Pittsburgh, like everybody would do fries on the sandwich, people would make those jokes and everything. But if I were doing more specifically Mo Damashek's home, maybe I could get her to make a big, just like a big vat of ketchup steak, which was a Zubasic family special, her side of the family. It was exactly as it sounds, but it wasn't just ketchup poured onto cube steak, but we ate it all the time in my house.
It was ketchup on cube steak?
It was cube steak, and the sauce that she would cook it in the pan in was basically like variation on ketchup.
Tomato sauce.
We ate it all the time over mashed potatoes. That was a staple in our house.
Sounds like Patrick Mahomes would love to eat at your house.
And let's stop down for a quick break here. Russell Wilson versus Justin Fields. Dave Damashek had ESPN reporter Brooke Pryor on to discuss the Steelers QB room and if it improved since last year.
The QB room is undeniably different than it was a year ago. But is it in fact better? I get that for Arthur Smith's offense, Mason Rudolph specifically isn't a fit. Kenny Pickett kind of sort of is, but I get that Russ/Fields is probably better for what Arthur Smith wants to do versus what Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett could have done. How say you?
You know, I do think that this is a better quarterback room. I think that Russell Wilson is not the player he was in Seattle. That's obvious. But when you look at the production that he had last year, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, something along those lines. It's been years since the Steelers have had a quarterback that threw 26 touchdown passes. And so if you can get that kind of production out of Russ for a year or even just for a little bit until Justin Fields is ready to take over, I think that Fields has an upside that is far exceeds anybody in the quarterback room a year ago, no matter what system he's in.
And this quarterback room, too, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
He's a superior talent at this point than Russell Wilson.
Yes. But I think that to me, the overarching theme with quarterbacks in the NFL right now is that there is just no patience for development, for getting these guys not only acclimated to the pro game and all that comes with it and NFL defenses, but also just in being an NFL player. It's, you know, all of the things that come along with being in the NFL, you're just kind of thrown in, your feet are put to the fire. And yes, this is a position that is a prestige position. You're paid a ton of money, but there is no patience for sitting and developing. And there's no acclimation period. And if you're bad in your first 2 years, well, you're bad forever and you're never going to get a second chance. And I just think that is so wrong, because we've seen guys have these prolonged careers, and sometimes it takes time to get adjusted to these things. Having Justin Fields sit behind Russell Wilson for any amount of time is, I think, going to help him adjust to being in an organization and in a situation that is much more stable than anything he had in Chicago, and help him understand, like, oh, I can be a pro. I can. This is a sustainable career, and I'm going to figure out how to kind of weather the storm without everything being a high of high or a low of low. Like, I think it's something that's going to center him and can help him have a much longer career as a professional.
I got to push back.
Hit me with
this. This is the rhetoric that we've heard for the last several days, where Russ is concerned and where Justin Fields is concerned. First of all, my reaction to it is that it feels like, if you kind of look at it, feels kind of flailing and desperate. You know, it's like, Omar Khan did it. Can you believe it? He just stole two quarterbacks for pennies on the dollar. Yeah, that nobody else wanted. I mean, Russ was not perceived as a starter in just about any other NFL town. And Justin Fields, we hear the rumors that other teams wanted him, but the Bears did him a solid by sending him to Pittsburgh. You know, I do feel like this thing of, like, every guy wants to play for Mike Tomlin. Isn't that obvious? It's so stable and he gets the best out of everybody. I don't know. I feel like the virtue of Russ and Fields right now versus Rudolph and Pickett is that the former two guys wanted to be in Pittsburgh this year, and the other two made it clear, we don't want to be in Pittsburgh anymore. I think that's the idea, that, like, everybody wants to play for Tomlin. Yeah, except for the guys that don't want to play for him and then badmouth him after the fact.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's fair. I also think that, to me, it makes sense. Like, you try these two guys out, as we talked about on Get Up this morning. It's like you get a free trial of two quarterbacks, test the tires on it, see how that goes. And if it doesn't work out, you've barely invested any draft capital, barely invested any money, and now you get a run at another quarterback class to try to draft another somebody else to take a run at it. To me, it's a very low risk to no risk situation.
We all love and crave the NFL, but should it be all year round, and should it expand to other countries? Toby Mergler and Dave Damashek on Trendy discuss if the NFL should be 24/7, 365.
And then here's the big one. Here's the big one, Dave Damashek. Expansion. If you had this much bye weeks, you now have a Europe division, right? Because you go in, you play two games, you come home, you have weeks off on either side. You can put a team in London, you can put a team in Berlin, put it in Paris, put it in Rome or Madrid or whatever it might be. You can keep expanding it, and you should have more players that are healthy. You can keep putting a good product on the field. So what am I missing? Why is the NFL the league that had the longest offseason when it is the most popular league? They clearly do not care about taking over the world. So what's stopping them from taking over more of the days of our life with actual product on the field?
I mean, listen, I, like most people to varying degrees, are resistant to changing what we like. You know, we don't want to disrupt things that are on the good side of our life ledger, and football watching is on the good side, right? So my initial reaction, like most people, is like, wait, don't change things. But once I get past that, and, you know, obviously progressive versus conservative and all that, and I don't mean that from a political standpoint, I mean that from a philosophical worldview. Okay, let's go through it. Let's take this seriously. I think you're exactly right that the NFL, plainly, my pal Handsome Hank Hodgson, steering that ship in Europe, you know, expanding where games are played from London once in a blue moon to many games over there in the UK to now in Germany and Mexico City and Brazil now and all that. So clearly the NFL likes where your head's at on this. And I think doing that, and it's, I think the sell to the NFLPA makes a lot of great sense too. This will benefit the players. The pushback I would give right out of the gate on that is, and I don't think the world over cares as much as clearly I do about this sort of thing, but I think it would almost require that you dome the vast majority of stadiums north of the Mason-Dixon line, at least, right? Like the more you bleed into February, the more likely it is you're going to get games like you had in Arrowhead in the wild card game, sub-zero temps and all of that. Maybe that's a minor concern, not in terms of dollars to the civic outlets that are going to have to fund it through the public and otherwise. But so that might be a concern. I also think in terms of why we hold football so dear versus the other sports is that, and maybe we've even lost this a little bit, is that it all happens once a week, maybe just for your team. But the collective of the NFL schedule feels like Sunday is everything, even though we now have Thursday night to go along with Monday night and all the rest of it. So, you know, based on my longstanding gold is precious because it's rare, you would make it less rare and therefore more easily accessible. And then do you care as much about it when it doesn't feel like a one-off special thing that only happens in one chunk of the sports calendar? All that being said, I think you're onto something. My question is, are we talking 365 then that the NFL season is ongoing? Maybe you have a Super Bowl every year that punctuates the season's end, but yeah, you pick right back up a couple weeks later and the new season is underway kind of thing.
I don't think it's a couple weeks later, but I do think it's a couple months later. Like the Premier League kicks off mid-August and wraps up in mid-May. And so that's a 9-month schedule. They're not playing the entire 9 months because of these built-in breaks. Or whatever it might be. And maybe you shorten that by a month. Maybe it's 8 months, like whatever it might be. Like, I think if you had 36 teams, you have your European expansion, you have 12 teams on bye every single week, right? So you have 24 teams not on bye. You got 12 games a week. And so like, to your point about like everything happens on Sunday, your Sundays are still going to be pretty action packed, Dave. Like even if you have a Thursday game, a Monday game, you have some Saturday games built in there, there's still going to be 7, 8, 9 games a week on Sundays. You can still, and you can avoid Saturdays during college football season. Give them 12, 14 Saturdays, whatever they need to fill their calendar, and then expand it out into the spring. And so your Sundays are still going to be pretty special. I wouldn't.
Well, that would be weird. I wonder how that would, I'm trying to think of that off the cuff as we talk here. So how does the draft go? Again, a minor concern that we can fix up, but like if the college football season remains what it is, how are decisions made to players in college?
I'm so glad you brought up the draft. I'm so glad, because it can go one of two ways, Dave. One is super lame and one is super fun. The super lame way is let's say the Super Bowl is in late April, early May, whatever it might be, like whenever we decide to end the season and work backwards from there. You hold the draft the very next week. And what are you talking about there? You're talking about like a 2-week delay, like less than a month delay from where it currently is. So it wouldn't be that disruptive from the status quo if you work backwards on the calendar. Here's the real fun way. You hold it in January and the players are immediately eligible, like baseball. Like you draft a guy, hey, he can come out and play in February, like whatever it might be. He's already in good shape, right? Let him come right in and contribute. Let him start earning a paycheck right away. What are we going to say? We're worried about his graduation? Like we're way past that. We're way through the looking glass on like caring about May being the special time. They get their correspondence classes and pick up their degree in the mail because they can pay somebody $800,000 to go check their mail for them because they're now rich. So do it baseball style. Bam. You have the first pick in the draft. It's February. Congratulations. You now have a starting running back the next week.
That's very interesting. I mean, again, that would go against the player. Say, I don't want to pin you down though, because what you're talking about is you're being heroic by expanding your brain and using your imagination a little bit. I don't want to try to pin you down. Remember Billy Blazejowski and Night Shift, Michael Keaton?
Sure.
Henry Winkler is there to kind of provide like, that's not realistic. I'm not going to play that role. I'm not going to be that guy. I like your Billy Blaze way. You're an idea man. talking into a recorder.
But I love the role reversal, because usually, like in our life, this is you throwing ideas at me, right, and me saying, well, we can't do it for this, that, or the other reason. So I appreciate you not clipping my wigs here.